This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. Listen to us on KPFK, KPFA, and other Pacifica affiliates and watch us on Free Speech TV Monday through Friday at 3 p.m. Pacific. That's 6 p.m. Eastern. FSTV is on Dish Network, DirecTV, and Roku. The Republican Party has taken it upon itself to make sure ballots are being properly cast this election. The Donald Trump campaign has said it will be monitoring precincts around the nation on November 8th. But the Democratic National Committee has asked courts to examine whether the GOP is violating a consent decree that was put in place in the 1980s to protect minority voters from intimidation. Racial minorities tend to vote Democratic. Meanwhile, a number of states that have passed very strict voter ID laws will be testing out their restrictions on November 8th. Texas is one of those states, and even early voters there have pushed up against their voter ID laws. My guest is Jennifer Clark. She is a counsel in the Brennan Center for Justice's Democracy Program. Welcome to the show, Jennifer.
Thank you for having me.
So first, let's talk about the poll intimidation charge, since that is quite in the news. Historically, what has this country's sort of background been when it comes to intimidating, particularly African-American voters, from casting their ballots? And I feel like that is an important framework when we look at this year's election, right?
Definitely. You know, you've really hit on why this is such a sensitive and such a, you know, a concerning issue, because in this country, we do have a long and very frightening history of voter intimidation at the polls that has centered primarily around race. And we've seen, you know, over the past 100 years that the right to vote being expanded to new groups of people, particularly African-Americans, has not been without a lot of resistance. And some of it has been, threatening and violent resistance, including at the polls on Election Day. So the reason why there is so much concern when you hear rhetoric around police the polls and, you know, make sure that people who look to you like they're not supposed to be voting aren't voting and different things like that, is that we far too often that kind of behavior has really crossed the line into illegal and concerning, threatening behavior on the part of people who are self-appointed poll monitors.
So have we seen instances, since there's so much early voting happening this election, have we seen instances of, you know, people who might be Trump supporters, might even be staff with the Trump campaign, monitoring the polls? And if so, what form does that take?
So, as you mentioned, there are lawsuits that are pending in multiple states now that are partisan in nature. You know, they've been brought by the Democratic National Committee against the Republican National Committee, alleging that this kind of behavior is planned and that there is some kind of that the Republican Party is basically working with the Trump campaign. Those lawsuits are being worked out. I don't know what the outcome will be of those. In terms of early voting and what we have actually seen, you know, generally speaking, with regards to the intimidation issue, it has gone well so far. We have seen a lot of voters come out. It doesn't mean that everything has run smoothly during early voting, because as you mentioned, there are a lot of states that have new restrictions in place that's leading to a lot of confusion. And I'm sure, we'll talk about that later. But in terms of, you know, actual outright intimidation and threats, we haven't seen a lot of that come to pass. Of course, there's always isolated incidents. That's true every election. But I think the important thing is that, you know, we have to make sure that people aren't not turning out because they're afraid of that happening. And that's why it's so important to make sure that that kind of behavior is, you know, cut off before it can actually happen, because just even the threat of it is enough to scare people away from the polls.
And of course, a big part of what happens during our elections is usually lack of awareness of what one's rights are and what the restrictions are. So how would one know if at your polling place, somebody that you observe is getting too close for comfort, is breaking the law? What is, and does it vary state by state?
Yeah, so, in general, federal law makes it illegal to, you know, intimidate and harass voters at the polls. There are protections in place that disallow that kind of behavior. And that includes if you're doing it to try and convince somebody to vote a certain way, to try to convince somebody not to vote at all, or if you're doing it because somebody is a member of a protected class, because, you know, someone's race or language status or anything like that, all of that is illegal under federal law. So wherever you are in the country, you have protections against that kind of behavior. States do have their own different protections, and that does vary from state to state. One important thing that varies from state to state that has been discussed this election is this idea of challengers. So if I am at the polls and I try to cast a ballot, in some states, there is a mechanism by which other people can challenge my eligibility as a voter, and there's different reasons that they might challenge it. So that's, you know, that would be, if you are an eligible voter and your vote, your right to vote was challenged, that would be a very frightening experience. And it really depends on what state you're in, how that's allowed to happen, and what your rights are. So I would encourage people, you know, to really arm themselves with the information. There's information on the Brennan Center's website about what's allowed and not allowed in your state. And if you are at the polls and you feel like something fishy is going on, someone is too close for comfort, or your right to vote has been challenged, there are resources. You can call 866-R-VOTE, which is a nonpartisan hotline that will help protect your right to vote.
And of course, Jennifer, a lot of the basis for the kind of thing that the Trump campaign is putting out, that, you know, he basically even tweeted there's just this massive amount of voter fraud happening, and he's calling his own members of his party naive for not admitting that. However, the Republican Party has for years contended without any real evidence that there is this voter fraud happening that's so widespread that it then justifies the voter ID laws. And yet, to date, one of the incidents that's come to light has been a Trump supporter who was caught trying to vote twice for her candidate. I think that's sort of ironic and amusing.
So I think you really highlighted something, which is that the rate at which people do this kind of impersonation fraud at the polls, which is what has been referenced during this campaign season, when, you know, you hear candidates discussing people voting 10 times, 15 times. And as you mentioned, has been what politicians have been arguing is happening for years now, and using that as a pretext to pass all kinds of laws like voter ID that make it harder for people to cast a ballot at the polls. You know, that kind of impersonation fraud is very rare. The idea that somebody tries to vote multiple times, tries to vote as their neighbor and as themselves and as their father,
or somebody who's dead or felon, etc. I mean, yeah. There's no personal gain to be had for voting twice, unless it's a big mass action that is attempting to change the outcome of a small race. And even then, we're talking about a huge mass conspiracy then between lots and lots of people, which would be very easy to uncover. It's not like you get paid to vote or even get a day off. I mean, it's hard enough to get people to the polls.
Yeah, you know, that's very true. And, you know, that really ties into this question of a rigged election, which is rhetoric that is so damaging when, you know, the right to vote is so hard won and so valued among so many Americans, making people believe that their vote doesn't count. It's a very misleading and unfortunate thing to say. And it's impossible to imagine how it could be done. As you mentioned, you know, to rig something like a presidential election, you would need a multi-state conspiracy that crossed borders, that crossed party lines. You know, it has not happened in our country's history, and every state at which it has been looked at, the numbers are very, very small. The courts are all saying that. Experts are all saying that. So it's simply not happening on a scale that could possibly sway an election like this one.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that a lot of our audience have watched a documentary by Greg Palast on cross-check voting and these lists that some Republicans have put together to gather people with similar-sounding foreign names. And if there is any conspiracy, it's certainly not being done by the Democrats. Well, Jennifer, let's talk about the voter ID laws. Texas, I mentioned, is one state that has had a very serious law put into place. There's also been a lot of early voting happening in Texas. And is in Texas, is this election the first test of their voter ID law? And if so, how has it been playing out in the early voting?
Sure. So Texas has had its strict photo ID law in place for a couple of smaller elections. Over the summer, because the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals found that the photo ID law actually discriminates against African-American and Latino Texans, the law has since been softened a little bit so that for the first time in this election, voters who don't have one of the photo IDs that's required and has a difficulty to getting it, which we saw plenty of those people come and testify at the trial. People didn't have their birth certificate, couldn't get a ride to the DMV, and a bunch of other reasons why people don't have, photo IDs and have difficulties getting them. If you're one of those voters this year in Texas, you should be able to cast a ballot that counts. The court created a remedy for those voters where they bring one of another wide range of documents, like a utility bill or something else that has their name and an address on it, and then they sign an affidavit explaining that they don't have photo ID. So that's what's supposed to be happening. But we have been monitoring the polls during early voting in Texas, which has been going on for about a week and a half now, and there has really been mass confusion there, unfortunately, surrounding the status of the law. We have some poll workers who don't even seem to know that the court made that finding this summer, don't seem familiar with the alternate process for voters who don't have one of these photo IDs. We've seen all kinds of signage that still relays the old law. So voters are waiting in line and they're confused because they're seeing signs that don't even mention the option of providing something else if you don't have ID. We have poll workers going up and down the line telling people that they have to show their photo ID without mentioning the alternative options for voters without photo ID. So it's really, it has not been running very well. And I hope that they can figure it out before Election Day, because we've already had a lot of voters who have been confused during early voting.
Right. I mean, and this isn't the kind of thing that necessarily changes the outcome of whole elections. But what, of course, it does is it has the potential impact on an individual level, a person's right to vote. It's a constitutional right to cast a ballot. And if you have been personally impacted, even if your vote may not have made a huge difference in the grand scheme of things, it impacts your right. Where else in the country has the Brennan Center been monitoring the impacts of these strict voter ID laws? Texas isn't the only place where Republican legislatures have managed to push these laws.
Right. So there are a lot of places to watch. And in fact, 14 states around the country have new restrictions in place for the first time in a presidential election this November. So Texas is certainly not alone in having, new rules in play at the polls for voters. Certainly, Wisconsin has been another state to watch. They also passed a strict photo ID law that has been going through a very long court battle, and we've seen that the state has been unable or unwilling to provide voters with the IDs that they are required to provide voters under the court order to vote. So we've seen a lot of voters there running into issues scrambling to get photo ID in time for the election because their law is still in place. We have seen problems in North Carolina. That certainly has been in the news a lot. I'm sure folks have heard about that. You know, they are one of the states that, after the Supreme Court gutted part of the Voting Rights Act in 2013, they're one of the states that passed a monster restrictive voting bill that cut back on all facets of elections there. This summer, we heard from a court of appeals that law was passed with the intent to discriminate against African-American voters there. So that law was actually struck down. But that doesn't mean that, again, that things have been going smoothly. We've had cutbacks to early voting. Despite that ruling, we've had lots of administrative problems at the polls. And we've also had, most recently, a bunch of purges of the voter rolls that have been brought to light in North Carolina, where it seems like at a disproportionate level, African-American voters have been kicked off the rolls through a process that, you know, some are alleging is a violation of federal law. So that's definitely another state to watch.
Now, what about this process of caging that some have been alleging was a practice that Republicans were engaging in before the election. And this is basically where you would send minority voters registered mail. If they happened to not be there to sign for that mail, their returned envelope was taken as evidence that they either didn't live at that address or that they failed to provide a change of address, and therefore that was being used to kick them off the rolls. Have you heard anything about that happening?
Yes. So that is somewhat similar to the allegations that are part of that North Carolina case I was just talking about, where there is a mechanism under that state's law, and that it's not alone. Other states have this mechanism too, where you can basically take it upon yourself to try to see if someone is still living at the address that they're registered under, and then, you know, use that as evidence that they should be kicked off the rolls.
I mean, that just invites voter intimidation from individual vigilantes.
Yeah, and you know, that part is very problematic, because under federal law, that is not supposed to be enough for someone to be kicked off the rolls. They still have to go through a longer process. So clearly something was going wrong there, because even if people take it upon themselves to try to do that, the state has to be the one who makes the ultimate decision whether somebody stays on or off the rolls. And there are allegations in this case, at least, that North Carolina wasn't following federal law in going through all of the checks and balances that it needed to before it took somebody off the rolls. So there's a great concern that people will show up this year, having not voted since the last presidential election, because we know that there are many voters who only vote in presidential elections, and they'll find that they aren't registered anymore. That's a big concern.
Well, finally, Jennifer, for those people who either on election day or during the ongoing early voting that takes place in various forms in various states, if they come across problems, aren't sure of their rights, is there a hotline? Is it state by state, or is there some kind of federal hotline or website that people can look to see if their rights are being violated or they're seeing someone else's rights violated?
Yes, definitely. So the hotline to call is nationwide. It is the Election Protection Hotline, and the number is 866-ROUR-VOTE, V-O-T-E. And that is nationwide. It is nonpartisan. It has people who are staffed to cover every state in the country. And, you know, you should call them if you worry that your rights are being violated. You should call them if you need to know if you're registered, if you're looking for your polling place. They can really cover everything. And there are, if you call that number and you would prefer to speak to somebody in Spanish, Korean, any one of a number of languages, they can transfer you to somebody. So I encourage people to really call if they need help.
That's 866-OUR-VOTE, O-U-R-V-O-T-E. And also give out the Brennan Center's website. I'm assuming you'll be keeping that site updated with any issues that might arise.
Definitely. So we're at Brennan Center, which is BRENNANcenter.org. And you can find us on Twitter as well. On Election Day, we'll be tweeting out updates about what's going on in various states and, of course, tweeting out the Election Protection Hotline so voters know where to call if they need help.
And your Twitter handle?
It is at Brennan Center.
At Brennan Center. We will post links to all of those pieces of information on our website later today. Jennifer, thank you so much for joining us, and thanks for your good work.
Thank you very much for having me.
Jennifer Clark is a counsel in the Brennan Center for Justice's Democracy Program. This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can sign up for our newsletter at risingupwithsonali.com to get daily emails with links to all our stories.